أنا وأنا وطني. حبك نار في فؤادي. متى أراك يوما حرا يا وطني؟
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Rafif Jujati, who is the English language spokesperson for the Syrian Local Coordination Committee, a Syrian-American activist in the Washington, D.C. area. Rafif helps organize protests, workshops, and other events designed to empower other activists to take action and inform the public about events in Syria. Welcome to Background Briefing, Rafif Jujati.
Thank you for having me.
And I heard you a day or so ago on Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman debating Patrick Seal. Of course, Patrick Seal for many decades has been essentially an asset of the Assad family, whether they pay him or whether he's what the KGB call a useful idiot is somewhat beside the point, because he's an apologist and a propagandist for the Assads for, as I say, for decades.
Well, that's absolutely right. And Patrick Seal's history with the Assad family goes back a long ways. Now, the problem is that today, to apologize for the Assad regime is really inexcusable. He's making indefensible arguments in the face of massacres and rampant violence.
Well, he's doing his job, but he's not alone. At the time when the uprising began, back in March of 2011, Vogue magazine carried a story that was completely sycophantic about the so-called First Lady, Bashar al-Assad's wife, the English-born wife, who was described in glowing terms about her fashion sense at the very time when Assad's goons were torturing and mutilating young boys for writing graffiti on the walls against the regime.
Absolutely. And the Assad family had paid a public relations firm to enhance their image abroad. And the bottom line is that Assad is an English-educated doctor, formerly, and his wife is British-born and quite the lovely woman. And what Vogue did was to paint a picture of a cosmopolitan young couple leading their country into reform, and never once mentioned the fact that boys as young as 13 were being tortured and mutilated. Absolutely.
They've obviously have, the regime has had a very effective public relations operation in the West, and Barbara Walters, she's a friend of the young woman who was Assad's press spokesperson, and she's the daughter of the Syrian ambassador to the United Nations, and that's how an interview with Bashar al-Assad was arranged for ABC News and Barbara Walters, who essentially gave a very softball interview. I take it those days are off. It's just the only people that seem to be defending Assad nowadays in the West are sort of, you know, diehard anti-colonial leftists who think that this somehow is a case of Western intervention against some heroic popular leader.
And they may believe that, but all they need to do is watch the news or read a couple of newspapers to know about the horrific bombardment of villages and towns. There are many villages in Syria that have been utterly destroyed by the regime's shelling. The people who continue to be Assad apologists are forgetting that Russia is shipping hundreds of millions of dollars worth of weapons with which the regime can kill civilians. They're also forgetting that this is a popular uprising that has lasted 15 months.
And by the way, in terms of support on the left for Assad, it doesn't make any sense, because the uprising began in Deraa, which is the poorest working class part of Syria. This is actually a very populist left-wing uprising. That's its roots.
It's an uprising that began when the poorest of the poor were demanding that Assad finally implement the reforms he'd been promising for 10 years. And rather than extend a hand and show some positive movement towards reform or any sort of economic assistance to these people, the Assad regime chose to detain young children and torture them. And then they chose to fire live ammunition at peaceful protests.
Now, apparently the UN monitors have entered the town of Haffa. There was a concern a few days ago that the regime was poised to do ethnic cleansing there. It is, of course, the town that holds one of Shia Islam's holiest sites, the tomb of the Prophet Muhammad's granddaughter. My understanding is that the worst has happened there, and it's the same of what happened just recently with Hula, that the regime comes in with the tanks, shells the place, then they send in the Shabiha, the so-called ghosts, which are these death squads organized by Assad's brother, and they do their dirty work, and then before the monitors come in, they clean up the evidence, or some of the evidence.
Right, so the typical pattern is that first they cut off all electricity and communications. Then they surround the town and go in and basically bomb it until there's nobody left. Now, Hafe in Latakia had a population of 30,000, and the regime shelled the city for 8 consecutive days. During that time, we do know that members of the Free Syrian Army were trying to smuggle families out of the area and into Turkey, and they succeeded in taking several families, but we don't have an exact count. And now a town that was once populated by 30,000 people is basically deserted. So we don't know the exact number of dead there.
So there is a discussion, of course, now in the press and amongst so-called experts about whether or not we're in a civil war. I mean, it seems like a somewhat fatuous discussion, given, 15,000 dead at least. It's never seemed to me to be a classic civil war by existing definitions, because it's not one group of civilians against another group of civilians. It's a regime's army against its own population. So it seems like we need a better definition than civil war for this.
Absolutely. Had it been two equally equipped armies fighting openly, we might have called it a civil war. Had it been civilian populations fighting one another, we might define it as a civil war. But what you have is a regime that is punishing a popular uprising that seeks freedom and democracy and regime change. It's important to remember that the revolution in Syria began with peaceful protests. In fact, even today, we have peaceful protests all around the country. The Free Syrian Army emerged as a result of the regime's violence against its own population, and as soldiers began defecting from the army because they were refusing to shoot at unarmed civilians.
Well, apparently there's been an uptick in defections. CBS got a camera in with some UN monitors a couple of days ago, and they filmed groups of defectors with the Free Syrian Army. And apparently what happens now is that somehow through a sort of underground telegraph, when these towns are under siege and the army is on the outskirts, the word gets out to some of these units. And when they go out on patrol at night, they sort of melt into the night and defect. I'd be curious to know how this is done and how pervasive is it, and what do you think the numbers are? And the army is completely controlled by the Alawite Officer Corps and by Maha, the brother of Bashar al-Assad. There's a repeating of history here, in as much as the massacres that took place under the father, Hafez al-Assad, were conducted by his brother, who lives in comfortable exile in London.
Yes, so it's difficult to describe the exact operations surrounding the defections. They have their own methods and their own means because, as many know, when soldiers are less secretive about their defections, they are immediately executed. Day after day, we get reports about soldiers who are killed as they're laying down arms or simply for refusing to fire. We also know that there are forward troops that are given orders to fire, and there are troops bringing up the rear whose sole job is to make sure that the forward soldiers shoot. So it's a very difficult situation for those defecting soldiers, And the act of defecting from the army is in itself, in some ways, a suicide mission. So the fact that there are well over 40,000 Free Syrian Army soldiers is amazing and speaks to the character of a people that does not want to fire on its own. With regard to Hafez, the father, this is the same scenario playing out, except it's on a much wider scale. Of course, this is nationwide. In Hama, Hafez al-Assad killed anywhere between 10,000 and 40,000 people, and we will actually never know exactly how many people were massacred, as the brother, Rifat's forces, completely razed the city. This is playing out again across the nation, and much like in 1982 in Hama, there has been a severe clampdown on the press, even on the UN observers, and on any international monitoring.
But Rafif Jerjani, whenever you see footage of the monitors mingling with the Syrian people, it's obvious that they are feeling for the first time free to express themselves, and there's a moment of protection. And then, in fact, there's some considerable panic as these monitors leave these areas. So, again, it's anecdotal, but you get the impression that even though you've got 40,000 defectors fighting along with the Free Syrian Army, and the extent to which they're being helped is not very clear, and it certainly doesn't seem particularly adequate compared to the forces arrayed against them. But the general impression I get is that the most of the population want this over, and I would assume that the best way to get it over with is to get rid of the Assad. So give us a sense, if you know, about how pervasive the opposition is, because we keep being told that the Alawite elite and the Christians are absolutely firmly in Assad's camp, and the reason they stick with him, whether they like him or not, is that they fear they're going to be massacred if the Sunni majority take over.
Well, I completely disagree with that. First of all, the opposition is pervasive in that it is around the entire nation. We have large numbers of Christian and Alawi supporters. In fact, there are hundreds of Alawites detained for having expressed their support of the revolution. We have some very prominent Alawis and Christians who have come out and spoken in favor of the opposition. Look, Syrians understand that Assad used to pretend to provide stability in the nation. Well, he's clearly failed in that. He has continuously blamed this uprising on Islamic terrorists. Yet how did they get in there in the first place under such a stable and secure nation? This is a popular uprising. The people of Syria are not sectarian by nature. The Assad regime has done its best to sow sectarian divisions among communities. While it's true that his top military officers are Alawis, primarily Alawis, it's not true that all of the soldiers are. The soldiers in Syria are conscripts. And we have a great many hundreds who are now failing to report for duty or going absent without leave.
So what is your sense then of how this is going to continue and how it's going to unfold? If this is a popular uprising, and a lot of analysts have told me that Bashar al-Assad's not really in control. So let's deal with that question first. Do you have any evidence that that's not the case? And if it is the case, who is actually in control? Is it his brother, Maher, who runs the death squads, or is his mother, or is it some other group of intelligence and military officers?
Well, there's been a lot of speculation ever since the day Bashar al-Assad took office. We have to keep in mind that he inherited the position from his father when his older brother was killed in a car crash. I believe the Assad family runs the country like a family farm, and so perhaps it's not solely Bashar al-Assad's decision to attack a village or commit massacres or other brutalities. However, he is technically the president of Syria and therefore bears full responsibility for what is happening.
So how then do you break the family grip without the country descending into bloodshed? I mean, I had an analyst on the other day from the State Department Policy Planning who's a specialist on the Middle East, Henri Barki, who made the argument that this spat between Russia and America, between Hillary and Putin, is not particularly helpful, and you might as well try and make Russia a part of the solution as opposed to a part of the problem.
Well, Russia is already part of the problem. Russia has just sent over new attack helicopters so that the regime can shell more villages. Just 2 weeks ago, they sent a shipment, $100 million worth of military equipment, to the Assad regime. Russia is very much a part of the problem and constitutes foreign intervention. With regard to ending the bloodshed is coming from the regime and the Shabiha. They're thugs who go in and massacre villagers who have on numerous occasions set fire to people while they were still alive. So the bloodshed is coming from one direction primarily.
Well, but the question would be then, if given a chance, the Syrian people would want to get rid of this regime, and they don't want a civil war, they want this to end. And the thing that's stopping it from ending is the regime and its sponsors, which are largely Russia and China.
And Iran.
And I've heard reports that Iran's actually playing a very active role in organizing the Syrian army and the intelligence people, and particularly supplying the drones that they're using ahead of these ethnic cleansing operations.
Well, in addition to supplying limited military equipment, Iran has also infused billions of dollars in cash into the Syrian economy to keep the Assad regime afloat. They have also provided some very sophisticated surveillance technology so that activists who are planning peaceful protests are targeted and tracked. And by the way, it's the same technology that was able to track Marie Colvin when she was in Homs and trying to upload her reports before the regime managed to launch a missile at the place.
Right, and I'd heard at the time when I was covering that story that it was an Iranian drone that pinpointed her. And now there's a lot more reports of this. So Iran's obviously got a lot at stake there, and so is Hezbollah next door in Lebanon. What about the reports that we hear from the deputy head of chief of staff of the Israeli Defense Forces, who says that Syria has the world's biggest chemical weapons arsenal and might try and use them against Israel as a way to distract from their own internal problems? Does that make any sense to you?
Well, I believe that the Assad regime has been stockpiling weapons, chemical and otherwise, for the past 42 years to turn them on its own population. I mean, come on, they really haven't fired a shot at Israel in years, and instead they have trained their forces on the civilian population. So I don't think Israel needs to be concerned. I think the people of Syria need to be concerned. We've already heard reports of the use of chemical weapons in Homs, in Daraa, in some of the Damascus suburbs. So I don't believe the Israelis need to fear as much as the Syrians do.
Well, just in closing then, let's go back to the main question, which is there a way out? Is there a way to get rid of this regime, which I think clearly the Syrian people would much prefer to see the regime go than to have the country descend into wholesale bloodshed? Is there a way to do it?
Yes, we need to pressure Russia so that they stop sending shipments of weapons. We need to be more stringent in enforcing the sanctions against Syria because the economy is in a tailspin. We need to increase the presence of the UN monitors. 300 monitors for a population of 22 million is ridiculous. What we need is thousands of monitors who set up stations and who actually do monitor each city. I don't think the Assad regime will go as far as butchering United Nations monitors. We need to give that a try. We need to pressure Assad himself into either seeking exile or something. But the bottom line is the people of Syria have said very, very clearly they do not want this regime. They do not want Bashar Assad, whether as a figurehead or as a true leader. They want the regime to go.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Thank you.
Rafif Jujati. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Again, I've been speaking with Rafish Shuijati, who's an English language spokesperson for the Syrian Local Coordination Committees, a Syrian-American activist in the Washington, D.C. area. Rafish helps organize protests, workshops, and other events designed to empower other activists to take action and inform the public about events in Syria. And we're going to take a brief station break and be back talking about how the U.S. is expanding a secret shadow war in Africa.
Now there's a woman on my block, just sits there, face in the head, saying, who's gonna take away? 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 Whose license to kill? Now he's hell-bent